During the last two sessions, we were discussing the nature of self-restraint or self-control, as we call it. Inasmuch as self-restraint is the essence of spiritual living, it is necessary to know something more about it as to what it actually means. What do you mean by self-restraint? Because all the ancient masters, sages and saints and scriptures have told us there is nothing that you cannot achieve by self-restraint. You become a master of yourself. When you become a master of yourself, it is said that you become a master of everything else also. Self-knowledge is all knowledge. Control of oneself is control of the whole world itself. This has been told us. Now, what does this mean finally? Where are we leading ourselves to? Why should there be self-restraint? And what is the difference between self-indulgence and self-control? Ethics and the practical methodology of living both are based on what philosophers generally call metaphysics, the nature of ultimate reality will decide what is proper conduct, morality, and what would be the way in which you are expected to live in this world. The mode of living and the conduct and character of a person depend upon the nature of ultimate being. Everything follows from the concept of the supreme reality, and its nature will decide the nature of everything else. All things in the world, whatever be their nature, are evolutes, corollaries, as it were, following from the fundamental theorem of the nature of ultimate being. What is ultimate being? Religions have called this ultimate existence as God, absolute substance, and by such other nomenclatures. There is something which is finally and beyond which nothing can be. Because if there is anything beyond it, there cannot be a final thing. The finality of a thing consists in it being all in all, and once you utter it, you have said everything about it. In the beginning, we were discussing about the nature of consciousness. Our essential nature seems to be consciousness. It is the being of consciousness that is the being of any one of us. This is what we learned in the earlier stages of our discussions. We also learned that this being is universal. Consciousness cannot be divided into parts. The consciousness that you are is an undivided consciousness, because the division of consciousness cannot be conceived by anyone. The conception of the division of consciousness will involve yourself in accepting the all-pervading nature of consciousness at the same time. Because to divide consciousness into parts would be to accept a gap between two parts of consciousness. And to know that there is a gap, consciousness has to be there. So there cannot be gap in the structure of consciousness. That is why it has to be everywhere. It is not only everywhere, it is the only thing that exists. Why is it so? Why is consciousness the only thing that is there and nothing else can be there? Because if you posit the presence of something outside consciousness, consciousness has to know that there is something outside it. So, by whatever logic you try to understand the nature of consciousness, you will find that it is only existing and nothing else can exist. Because the idea of something else will defeat the all-pervading nature of consciousness and it will divide itself, which is not a possibility. So, ultimate being is consciousness only. Because of its infinitude, endlessness, perfection, deathlessness, absoluteness, we call it Almighty. Generally, when we pray to the Almighty God, we look out the skies, "Oh God, bless me." The idea of looking up in our prayer is a symbolic manifestation of our inward feeling that it is above us. The aboveness does not necessarily mean location in space, far off in the skies. It is a logical superiority, a qualitative ascent of consciousness. It is not measurable in mathematical or geometrical terms. Higher consciousness is not high in the sense that it is several kilometers away. In the Bhagavad Gita, you have in simple verses an explanation of all this mystery of consciousness and the whole of spiritual discipline. Uddhared Atmanatmanam Natmanam Avasadayet Atmaiva Khyatmano Bandhu Atmaiva Ripuratmana Bandhur Atmanastasya Yenatmai Vatmana Jidaha Anatmanastu Shatrute Varte Dhatmaiva Shatruvate. I for myself feel that there is no need of reading any book. These two verses are quite sufficient if you understand their implication. What does it mean? I think all of you know something about the Bhagavad Gita. Lift the self by the self. That is the meaning of Uddharet Atmanatmanam. Raise the self by the self. I am giving a literal translation of these verses without going into any commentary. Uddharet Atmanatmanam. Raise the self by the self. Don't deprecate the self. Natmanam Avasadeve. Don't cast a mood of despondency on the self. Atmaiva Bandhu, Atmaiva Ripuhu, both it is said. Your self is your friend and your self is your enemy. The second part is an explanation of the first part. Raise the self by the self. The higher self has to raise the lower self. Though lower self is to be in a state of harmony with the higher self. The lower self, when it is raised to the status of the higher self becomes the friend of the lower self. If the lower self remains completely satisfied in its own finitude, and the higher self is completely out of its purview, the higher self may look like an enemy. Atmaiva syatmano bandhuhu, atmaiva vipuratmana. The self is the friend of the self is the enemy of the self. Which self is the friend? Which self is the enemy? The higher self is the friend and also the enemy, according to your attitude towards it. Your attitude. What is this your? Here the your signifies the lower self. Your contaminated physical consciousness. Your finitude of feeling. That is the lower self. I am Mr. So-and-so. I am so-and-so, son of so-and-so, daughter of so-and-so, relative of so-and-so. This person is here. I come from such and such a place. The consciousness which asserts itself in this manner is the lower self. The idea of finitude, limitation, location implies the existence of that which is not located. There cannot be a consciousness of finitude unless there is an awareness of the infinite also beyond itself. So the infinite has to be there. The infinite is above the finite self. In what sense is it high? Not in a measurable manner. I have been giving generally the analogy of higher education and lower education. The higher education is above the lower education. But when you use the word above, you are likely to think that one is sitting on the head of another. It is not measurable by distance. What is the distance between lower education and higher education? There is no measurable distance, though one is far away from the other, no doubt. It is a conceptual, ideological, logical distance, distance in consciousness itself. Consciousness cannot have a geometrical distance. So it is a distance measurable by consciousness itself. Therefore, intriguing indeed is the nature of this self. It is a wonder, you can't understand what is this self. Yet, it has to be accepted because you know that you are limited. The limited consciousness implies the presence of an unlimited consciousness. So what the Bhagavad Gita means by saying higher and lower is nothing but the unlimited consciousness and the limited consciousness. The infinite consciousness is your friend. It is also your enemy. If you oppose it, it becomes your enemy. If you are in a state of harmony with it, it is your friend. Self-control, coming to the point now, is nothing but the removal of all the impediments in the finitude of self, which prevent the friendly attitude that you have to develop towards the infinite self. How can you be a friend of the infinite? What do you mean by a friend? A friend is one who can set himself or herself perfectly in tune with the other who is the friend or alter ego. They have to think alike. If two people think alike perfectly, they become friends. But if they think differently, they cannot become friends. So if you have to become the friend of the infinite self, you have to think like the infinite self. What does the infinite self think? In that way, you also think. Do you know what the infinite self is thinking? It cannot think anything other than its own self. Because to think as we do in our common perceptional or cognitional parlance would be to be aware of something outside oneself. The infinite consciousness does not have anything outside itself. Therefore, it cannot think as we are thinking in a perceptional manner. What does the infinite consciousness think? It thinks itself. I think it was Aristotle who said, thought thinking itself is God. Thought thinking another thing is a human being, a mortal. Now, here is the meaning of the higher self and the lower self. Why should you restrain yourself? Why should there be self-control? You have to understand first of all what is the meaning of the term self-control or self-restraint. It is the dissolution of or resolution of those factors in the finite self which block the connection between the finite and the infinite. There is a wall between the finite and the infinite. This wall is what you call objectivity, externality consciousness, or involvement in space, time and causation. When you are aware of something outside you, you are thinking contrary to the universal self. At that time, you are not a friend of God. If you are not a friend of God, He also is not your friend. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam tathaiva bhayamyaham. This is the Gita. As you approach me, so I will approach you. What you think of God, that He will think of you. Now, what do you think about God? You cannot think Him because you are thinking of the world of objects. You are entangled in objects of sensory attraction. Whole day and night we are running after the pleasant things in the world. And for the purpose of the enjoyment of pleasant objects in the world, we move earth and heaven to remove obstacles to this kind of sensory satisfaction. Running after the objects of sense which are supposed to be satisfied and simultaneously rejecting anything else which is going to be an obstacle to this pursuit of pleasure, this is what we are doing day in and day out. We have no other work. You go to the factory, be a clerk, be an officer, minister, do whatever you like. All these are various forms taken by the pursuit of finitude towards an enjoyment through the sense organs. There is no such thing as enjoyment through the sense organs. The senses cannot give you satisfaction. You may ask me, why do I feel happy when the object of satisfaction is obtained by me? When a desirable object comes near you, you feel very happy. When it is very near, you are still more happy. When you possess that desirable object, you have an immense happiness. But you must know that even if that desired object is really under your grip, and you are holding it in your hand, you have an anxiety inside that you may lose it one day. There can be bereavement. So even the highest satisfaction to the sense organs is infected with the feeling of the agony that you may lose it one day or the other. Anything that you possess in this world can be lost. So the possibility of losing even the best of things gnaws into your vitals. It poisons the joy that you are apparently having through sense contact. So even sensory satisfaction is really no satisfaction. It is like sweet porridge or kheer mixed with juice of neem leaves. It is bitter and you mix it with sweetness. The bitterness of sense satisfaction is in its unreliability, in the sense that you cannot possess anything finally. No two people can join completely. They can split any moment, whatever be their relationship. All friendship is conditional. Unconditional friendship is unthought of in this world. Two things cannot become one. A cannot be B. It is a contradiction. A is A only. So, the sense organs try to convert B into A. The object should be myself, which is an impossibility because B cannot be A. It is a logical contradiction. A is A only, B is B. How can B be A? But this contradiction is involved in all kinds of sensory enjoyment. Therefore, the finite being, which every one of us is in a world of great catastrophic error, which is the running after the things that are apparently outside. How could there be anything outside if the ultimate being is infinite? So in your search for the objects of sense, you are denying the infinity, denying God Himself. Therefore, you are suffering because God Himself becomes your enemy. Atmevaripuratmana, the infinite self becomes the enemy of the finite self when it is behaving in a manner contrary to the nature of the infinite self. If you think like God, God will think you. But if you think like a finite being wedded to the sense organs, you will be in a tragedy. What is a tragedy? One thing is, the possessed object will leave you one day or the other. Money you will lose, land you can lose, building you can lose, friends you can lose, husband can lose the wife, wife can lose the husband, children will go, everything can go anytime. So you have a feeling inside, one day I will lose all things. So the possibility of a sorrow following a temporary enjoyment vitiates the enjoyment. So even the temporary satisfaction of sense organs is not a real sense satisfaction. It is a big blunder. Secondly, what happens is, when your mind feels that the object of desire has been possessed, that mind which was moving outside itself, moving away from its center towards the object, withdraws itself because of the feeling that there is no necessity now to go outside. I have got what I want. So why should I go outside? Temporarily, for a flash of a second, the mind ceases to think of the object. It rests in itself. Then immediately the consciousness inside flashes forth in that resting condition of the mind, sattva as it is called. You feel a deluded happiness when the object of satisfaction is obtained by you. The object has not given satisfaction. Don't be under the impression that you have got it from the object. What has happened is something else. What is it that has happened? The mind that was hovering around another object which he would wanted has ceased to function in an objective manner because of the feeling that the object has been obtained. When it ceases thinking in terms of an object, the Rajoguna Prakriti in the mind ceases, sattva manifests itself. Sattva is like a clean mirror. Through that the Atman flashes forth. Immediately you feel happy. That is why there is happiness even in sense satisfaction. It is not coming from the object, it is from yourself only. So all life in this world is a big tragedy. The Ramayana and the Mahabharata, which are the great epics of life, tell you how tragic things are. Because you are pursuing the will of the wisp, a phantasmagoria, a mirage that you are pursuing, things which are not there, you are pursuing on there. It is like a dream percipient, running after the beautiful things of dream world. The dream objects also are included in the world of dream and therefore they cannot give you satisfaction. Self-control therefore is the art of behaving in your consciousness in such a way that it is in tune with the infinite being. For that purpose you should withdraw the channelizing of consciousness through the sense organs outside. So, it appears that self-control is like sense control, they look alike. Sense control is self control, and vice versa, self control is sense control. Now, there is a peculiar difficulty here in understanding the nature of self control, because you may think it is sense control, as it has been explained just now, withdrawing consciousness from the sense organs. So, what spiritual seekers sometimes do wrongly is they suppress the activity of the sense organs. If seeing an object outside is an activity contrary to the nature of infinite being, you close your eyes and then you think that the eyes are controlled. Plug your ears and so on. You cause the practical cessation of the operation of the sense organs, but sensation is different from the sense organ. This is a question of psychology. You are happy or unhappy not because of the presence of the sense organs, but because of the sensation that is operating through the sense organs. Even a blind person who cannot see has a desire. Even if you cannot hear deaf, still you have a desire. So desire cannot cease by being deaf and blind. You may not speak at all, you are absorbing moan forever, you are a dumb man. But the desire cannot become dumb. So closing the mouth in mauna, in a literal sense, closing the eyes, closing the ears, that is not self-control. Because the self is not actually sense organ. You have to understand what actually is the meaning of sense self-restraint. It is the withdrawal of the tendency of consciousness to move through the sense organs. Organs are faultless, they are not your enemies, they are fleshy manifestations of the physical body. The organs are there even in a dead body. When a person dies, the eyes are there, the ears are there, but they are not doing any activity through sensation. So the living person is a person who has sensation and not merely who has organs like eyes, ears, etc. So the art of self-restraint is the restraint of the tendency of consciousness to protect itself through the aperture of the sense organs. So actually self-control means control of consciousness. It is the restraint of consciousness by consciousness. Restraint of the lower operation of consciousness by the higher operation of consciousness. The finite consciousness is restrained by the metaphysical consciousness or the universal consciousness. This is, again we come to the Platonic idea. The idea of Plato is the metaphysical reality, and the perceptional consciousness is the lower sensory one. So spiritual life is not a simple thing. It is an engineering feat, an artistic feat, a mathematical feat, whatever you may call it. Caution, vigilance is the watchword of the spiritual seeker. Any moment you can slip down. Because indriyani pramachini haranti prasabam mana, impetuous are the sense organs. Like a powerful wind, a tornado, a cyclone on the surface of the ocean may tossle simply here and there the ship that is on the surface and throw it away in any direction. So the ship of the mind can be thrown in any direction by the impetuous gale-like movement of the sense desires. The mind thinks in terms of sensory report. What does the mind think? It only thinks what the senses say. If the eyes say that there is a tree, the mind accepts, yes, there is a tree, I think the tree. The report of the eye that there is an object called the tree is accepted by the mind and it is convinced by the thought, yes, there is. And the intellect just okays it. So, the power of the sense organs is nothing but the power of desire. Why do you desire? What has happened to you? Desire is an erroneous handling of your love for God Himself. That is why no desire can be fulfilled finally in this world. You are employing finite means of satisfying an infinite desire. How can an infinite longing be satisfied by means which are purely finite? Nasti krita kritena, says the Upanishad. The unmade cannot be known by the made, which is to say, the eternal cannot be known through the temporal. There is no connection between them. The world is a spatio-temporal externality, whereas the absolute is a non-temporal, non-spatial infinitude. So there is no connection between the two. A person who lives in this world of space-time objectivity cannot contact the infinite. To contact the infinite, you have to be in a state of consciousness which is in harmony with the state of infinity. I have told you enough about what self-control is. It is not controlling any particular organ. It is not a repression of any particular function. It is an absence of the longing that consciousness apparently has in respect of a thing outside itself. Tell the consciousness, outside you nothing is. Because if consciousness is something outside it, you have to be outside there also. Therefore, consciousness is everywhere. So, how can consciousness love an object? It is a contradiction, great blunder. Tell the consciousness, then the senses will come down. Tell the consciousness, what are you doing? When you are seeing something, hearing something, wanting something, you are trying to see, perceive, have, enjoy, possess something which is really not there. This is why some people say the world does not exist. It does not exist in the sense that externality does not exist. The so-called externality is a phenomenon that is projected by the operation of what we call spatiality and temporality and causality. These are the troublemakers to us, which cannot operate in infinite consciousness. Once again, go back to the origin of our discussion. Consciousness cannot but be infinite. There cannot be anything outside it. Therefore, to desire an object is an absurd activity of consciousness. It is a futility in its finality. Tell the mind again and again, what are you looking at? What are you seeing? What are you thinking? What do you want? You cannot want anything, really speaking, because consciousness cannot have anything outside it. So desires themselves are meaningless. They are like diseases of consciousness. So you have to go on doing japa of this great truth. Consciousness cannot have anything external to it. Therefore, the projection of consciousness in terms of an object through the sense organs is an erroneous activity. Therefore, the tendency of consciousness to move outside will withdraw. The moment you withdraw, the tendency of your lower consciousness in terms of an object, the higher self manifests itself immediately. The dreaming man wakes up into a wider awareness. This happens even in a very short time if you could really earnestly practice this technique of yoga. This is called yoga, actually speaking. What you call yoga is nothing but self-control, the withdrawal of tendency of externalized consciousness and centralizing it in the infinitude of consciousness. Here is the whole of Patanjali, whole of Vedanta, everything in a nutshell before you. This is the reason why self-restraint is necessary. And once you are successful, even in an adequate measure, in the art of restraining your consciousness, heaven will descend on your head. Patanjali says, a cloud of joy and virtue will inundate your dharma mega samadhi velatam. Righteousness will manifest from yourself. You need not do right things. They will automatically emanate from you, like a fragrance from a flower. Your body will emanate righteousness. Like a rose flower you will be. In the Bhagavata Purana, it is said that Rishabhadeva, one of the great sages, used to emit fragrance of jasmine for several miles away from his body. When you mood, you can find out jasmine smell. The self-control that he has achieved to such an extent that God was implanted in his heart. So it was the fragrance of God himself. So all the little fragrance of the nose, the flower, and the beauty of the music, and the color, all these things are coming from God only, from the infinite consciousness. These things do not have anything. A reflection of the infinite in the finite projections look like beautiful things and all that. So there is a mistake in living in the way you are living in this world. So you have come to the academy to become divine personalities. If perhaps grace of God is abundant, you may become God-men. And when you return home, you will not be these little people, you will be big people, wise people, better people, emanating the fragrance of jasmine from your personality. God will bless you. Hare.